Well, good morning. So glad to be here with you guys today. As Daniel said, my name is Philip Pattison, and I'm with a team called Foster the Bay. And can I just tell you, like, right out the gate, I'm stoked to be at Eden. Like, we've been here now, I don't know, three, four, or five times visiting. I've taught once or twice here. My wife and I have just come with our family just to worship here a couple of times as well. And I get a chance to go and visit a lot of churches in the Bay Area now. And, like, this is one of my favorite places to be. I've said this before here, but I'm on a team at another church locally, but if I weren't on that team, there are a couple of churches that, like, it would be at the top of our list to make our home, and Eden's right there. And so we just love what God is doing here, so believe in this church. And again, I've been looking forward to being here all week long. So thanks again, Daniel, for the invitation and for the opportunity to share. I'm a little bit under the weather, so I'm going to go back and forth between sounding like a prepubescent boy, and my voice is going to crack, and then sounding like Batman. And so bear with me, but try to ignore that. Don't let that be a distraction for you, because I really do think that God has something important for us to talk about today. I want to share something, like a conversation that I think is really near to the heart of God. And because it's near to the heart of God, it's near to the heart of Daniel and Kayla and Eden Church. And so, again, as Daniel said, lean in. I think God's got something for us today. We're going to talk about what I'll just call remarkable compassion. Hey, remarkable compassion. And just so we're all on the same page, like right out the gate, let me tell you what that means. Okay, so that word compassion, you break it down into two. You take the second part of the word passion, right? And that means to suffer. Take the first part of the word calm, so of compassion. Take the first part, C-O-M, that means with. So compassion means to suffer with. Or my definition is compassion means to stand by or to stand for or to stand with someone who's suffering. And again, like I said, this is something that's really near to the heart of God. And we know this when we open up the scriptures, because you open up the Bible, we know that God loves every person on this planet, right? Every man, woman, and child, right? For God so loved For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, right? He loves every person on this planet. And yet, if you open up the Bible, you're going to see that there are some people that just seem to make the top of God's list. You open up the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, beginning of the Bible to the end of the Bible, you're going to see that there are some people that have a special place in God's heart. You know who they are. It's the orphan. It's the widow. And it's the sojourner, or in our term today, the immigrant. The orphan, the widow, and the immigrant. In other words, those who are without a family, those who have suffered deep loss, and those who are without a home. You see it all the time in the scripture. Psalm 82 says, defend the weak and the fatherless, uphold the cause of the poor and the oppressed, rescue the weak and the needy. You're going to find phrases like that. That's just one of like hundreds and hundreds of phrases in the Bible like that, that really show us our heart of God. Which, by the way, if you're here and you're just like, you're visiting for the first time and you're just curious what all of this Christianity thing is about, you've seen the signs of Eden out there, you're just here checking it out, and you're curious what the Christian perspective of who God is, like this is it. Like, you come on a great day, because you're going to be able to see really the heart and the character of God. You're going to see that, God's heart in the scriptures, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And that's why, over the centuries, for the last 2,000 years, this right here has been a defining characteristic of the church. Because this is God's heart, and therefore it's been his heart for his people. That right there has been a defining character, a defining mark of the church. Well, remarkable compassion. In fact, did you know that the first known hospital in every nation across the globe was started by the Christian movement? Do you know that? Did you know that education reform and women's rights and the abolition of slavery, they all trace their roots back to the Christian movement? The same is true with adoption. There are these written accounts of an old Roman practice about how when a child would be born into a family, the child would be placed down at the feet of its father. And if the father stooped down and picked up the child into his arms, the child was legitimized and then brought into the family. But sometimes the father didn't stoop down and pick up the child for whatever reason. Like, maybe the child looked sick or frail. Maybe the child wasn't the preferred gender of the time. Maybe it was just an inconvenient time for the family, for whatever. But like sometimes the father didn't stoop down and pick up the child. Instead, what would happen, the child would be taken outside of the city to a designated place where it would be left alone to die. From the elements, from starvation, from wild animals. But it was the Christian church that reversed the practice. It was the Christian church that would go out to these designated places on a regular basis, and they would rescue these children that had been neglected, and they would bring them into their own homes, and they would raise them up as their own beloved sons and daughters. And it was the Christian church that put pressure on the Roman government to outlaw the practice. Like, that's our history. That's our legacy. It's been a defining characteristic of the church. The same is true with foster care. Let me tell you about a guy named Charles Brace. Charles Brace in the 1800s was born in the northeastern part of the United States, small town, middle class family, like nothing special. But his parents were followers of Jesus, and at a real young age, Charles too placed his faith in Christ. And one day he was sitting in church as a teenager, listening to a message from a pastor, just like you are today, and the pastor said something that like rocked his world, just forever changed his life. And I'm going to paraphrase it here, but like this is basically what the pastor said. He said, you know, when we think about all that God has done for us, all the compassion and the love that he has shown to us, when we see the broken and the hurting around us, it's impossible for us to think that we don't have at least some level of responsibility to do something. In light of all that God has done for us, when we see the hurting around us, it's impossible for us to think that we don't have at least some level of responsibility to get engaged. Like, that pierced his heart. And so a few years would go by, and then Charles found himself in New York City. He was in seminary, in Bible school, training to become a pastor. And one day he was out walking in the city, and he walked into a neighborhood called Five Points. Anybody heard of the neighborhood Five Points in New York? How many of you have seen Gaines in New York? Can you admit that in church? You see, all right, thank you. Thank you, Sharon. It's a terrible movie. if you've seen Gaines in New York, okay, it's a good movie. Don't let that be the one thing that you pull from this message. Like, oh, we got to go run Gangs in New York. If you see Gangs in New York, you'll know Five Points was a neighborhood known for its crime, its poverty, its prostitution. And so Charles walked through this neighborhood that day, and he said what he saw made his heart melt. He saw hundreds and hundreds of kids living on the streets, living incredibly unhealthy, dangerous environments. And as he walked in the neighborhood and he saw what he saw, his mind raced back to what that pastor said years ago, and he realized, and in light of what he was seeing, and in light of what all that God had done for him, he had a responsibility to do something. And so he did. He gathered a bunch of his buddies together, and they started what they called the Children's Aid Society. You can look them up today, actually. They're still going today. But the Children's Aid Society, they started basically all of these programs to help address some of these needs for these, like some of the systemic issues in the city. Like, they started a whole bunch of programs that today seem really commonplace for us, and at the time were absolutely revolutionary. They didn't exist. So, like, they started the first free school lunch program for these kids. They started the first free dental clinics. They started the first schools for handicapped children. They started the first parent-teachers associations for school. PTA was started by these guys. Most notably, though, they started what we now call foster care. So they would help these kids who were living in these unhealthy environments or who had been orphaned, and they would help them to find loving, stable homes. So for those who had biological families, they were able to do what they needed to do to be able to create safe, loving environments again for them to be able to welcome their kids back into their home. What morphed and evolved from the Children's Aid Society back in the 1800s is become what we now call is the modern foster care system. So friends, hear me. Like, foster care was started by a pastor. Foster care was started by a Christian who understood that in light of all that God has done for us, surely we could do the same for someone else. That's our legacy. I love the series that you guys are doing, talking about loving local, because again, like that's the history of the church. I'm excited to be here today to be able to share with you what God is doing here in the Bay Area, because the reality is we have the opportunity to carry on that same legacy today in our generation, in the church, right here in the Bay Area. It's happening. A few years ago, I was pastoring a small church in South San Jose. And my wife and I, this is my wife Jessica here, my wife and I had just become foster parents. And we had talked about it for a lot of years, finally took the plunge, and like our hearts just broke for these kids. As we, like I grew up with kids, I grew up having foster brothers and sisters. My parents adopted four boys from the foster system. So like I grew up with it, but it wasn't until we really took that step ourselves that we really began to understand what these kids go through and all the trauma that they've experienced and that they even led to them being removed from the home, but now they're separated from their biological. It's heartbreaking what these kids go through. Every kid in foster care has had a traumatic experience. Hearts is broken. We thought, gosh, what platform can we leverage to make more of a difference? We thought, let's invite our church into this. And so we came up with this idea. We said, we'll come up with some donations over here for kids in care, and we'll do some events for parents, foster parents. And then we thought, how cool would it be from our church of about 100 people, how cool would it be to see one new foster family this year step forward? And so we cast that vision to our church in early 2015. And to do that, we invited somebody from Santa Clara County, from the county agency here, a social worker, to come out and help us speak on behalf of the county. Here's the need and the opportunity. And so she came out as February of 2015. And when we did that, she shared for a few minutes, and then she sat like in the back corner the rest of the morning, and she just kind of watched our church have this conversation together about what would it look like for us to engage foster care. And she was really kind of moved by it. And she went back to the county building that next week, and she started telling others in her county building what she was experiencing. She's like, you got to hear what I did this last weekend. So sweet. And so they reached out to us a couple weeks later, and they said, hey, we'd like to meet with you guys. And we said, sure. So we sat down in my little office, and they said, hey, we think it's really cool what your church is wanting to do, and like we're supportive of it. We're for it. She said, but here's the truth. She said, the crisis in the foster care system in our county is just bigger than your church. She said, do you think that there are other churches that might want to do the same thing? She said, this is the term she used. She said, would you guys consider spearheading a faith alliance? And I remember sitting across from her thinking, well, what does that mean? I actually asked her, I said, can you please tell me what that means to you? Like, what exactly are you asking of me? And she said, well, honestly, we don't need more events. Like, and we've got donations coming in from other organizations. She's like, really? Well, we need our families. We need people. She said, we have far more kids entering into foster care today than we have homes that are ready to care for them. And so long story short, we said yes, and we launched a movement that we call Foster the Bay. And this faith alliance, by the grace of God, because of amazing churches like Eden, that say, hey, we want to be a part of this in some way. I wasn't banging down the door for Daniel to come and let me speak. Daniel reached out and said, we see what's happening, and we want to be a part of this in some way. It's because of great churches like Eden, by the grace of God. Now, we've seen this faith alliance over the last 2.5 years. We launched in the fall of 2015. Over the last 2.5 years, grow from one church now to 30 churches here in the Bay Area. And it's continuing to grow. We had an event last night where there's 41 churches, 41 Bay Area churches represented, that are committed to ensuring that every single child in foster care has a loving home. And because of these 30 churches, now we've already seen 92 kids placed in Foster the Bay homes. Isn't that awesome? But it's just the beginning. Because the reality is there's actually over 7,000 children in foster care in the Bay Area. And that's a lot of kids. 7,000 kids. When you hear a number like 7,000, like it's easy to kind of hold that at arm's length, right? Kind of hold that at a distance. But the reality is that's 7,000 children. I mean, it's hard not to put a face to it when I see a beautiful little baby like that, right in the very front. 7,000 children, just like this little one. 7,000 children with 7,000 names and 7,000 stories, and every single one of their stories matters to God. And because their stories matter to God, their stories matter to us. And so we call it Foster the Bay for a reason, and our dream is to see this coalition of churches, this faith alliance, as this woman called it, this faith alliance grow to every county in the Bay Area, and to one day see a waiting list of families rather than a waiting list of kids in need of a home. Wouldn't that be awesome? And wouldn't it be so cool to see the church on the front lines to make that a reality? We're slowly but surely kind of taking steps towards it. We launched, I told you, in Santa Clara County in the fall of 2015. Last fall, we expanded to San Mateo. Today, in fact, today, we are launching in San Francisco. Our very first year, we have 6 churches this spring in San Francisco that are casting vision to their communities to get engaged with the foster care system. We've partnered with the county agencies there. Today, the First Church is casting vision right now as we speak. Would you actually, in fact, today, if sometime you think about it, would you pray for our churches in San Francisco? We've been blown away at the openness of the church in San Francisco to get engaged. More than that, we've been blown away at the city agencies to partner with the faith community. I was really nervous about launching in San Francisco because I'm thinking, how the government in San Francisco, the faith community, how's that going to work? But I couldn't have been more wrong. I had a conversation with a woman, her name is Sophia, she's the permanency director in San Francisco, and what she told me, I said, can I quote you on this? She said, yes. She said, the critical missing piece to our work in child welfare has been the faith community. That's heartbreaking to me, because we started it. We started this. And so I'm stoked, though, that we have the opportunity to step back into what was once ours. More than that, I went on to have another conversation with a woman in San Francisco, and this is what she told me. She said, she's with an organization called Safe and Sound. BAATC might have some relationship with Safe and Sound, I'm not sure. But they work specifically with the kids in foster care that have experienced trafficking, human trafficking. She told me, this woman, Elizabeth, told me, she said, Philip, I have 69 open cases of boys and girls in San Francisco that have been trafficked. I asked her, I said, how many of those kids have you been able to find homes for, like stable, loving homes, these kids where they can find some kind of healing and some kind of hope for their future? How many of these 69, you know what she said? 12. Which means 57 kids in our backyard that need loving homes, that have experienced exploitation. We're having to send out of the Bay Area, now oftentimes now out of state, to the Northeast or to the Southwest. We've talked so long as a church about how much we care about trafficking, how big of a deal this is to us. We got 57 kids in San Francisco alone that we can't find homes for. Like, God willing, like, we want to help change that. She went on to tell me at the end of that meeting that she said, Phil, can I tell you one more thing before we go? And I said, sure. She said, I don't want you to think I'm crazy, though. And I said, that's all right. She said, well, recently, she said, I had this one particular case, and she said the case for this girl was just particularly horrific, what this girl had gone through. And she said it was so bad. She said, I couldn't like leave it at work. I was taking it home with me every night. I couldn't shake it. And she said, in the midst of it, I had this dream. And she said, and in this dream, there was this house, and this house was on fire, was burning down. And she said, as I saw this house, these kids that I work with, these boys and girls that were in these upper story windows, or up their story, she said they were jumping out of these windows. And she said, you got to understand, like, the suicidal tendencies of these kids that I work with is really, really high because of everything that they've gone through. I just read recently that for foster youth in general, the suicidal attempts are four times higher than the average youth because of all that they've gone through. She said, but these kids in particular, like, the suicidal tendencies are really high, and so these kids are jumping out of this roof. She said, out of these windows, and I said, I was on the ground, and I was trying to catch them before they hit the ground. The problem is that there were too many kids, and I couldn't catch them all. And she said, but in my dream, she said, I turned around, and I saw a whole crowd of people running up behind me, and they started catching these kids with me. And she said, just after I had that dream, I heard about Foster the Bay. And she said, I think that's you guys. I think that's the churches of San Francisco. And I pray to God that she's right. Would you pray with us as we launch in San Francisco? And we want to care for the most vulnerable population right in the heart of the Bay Area. But again, it's not just San Francisco. It's right here in Santa Clara County as well. In fact, there's well over 1,000 kids just here in Santa Clara County that are in foster care. We have, the numbers are always fluctuating, a couple hundred foster families. The need is tremendously high here, right here in our own backyard. When we launched Foster the Bay, we launched really with three core beliefs that really undergird what we do. And I want to share these three core beliefs with you in the remainder of our time. But as I share them with you, I want you to know that these aren't just like the foundation of what we do and why we do Foster the Bay. Really, this is at the heart of every expression of remarkable compassion. So whatever it is that God has laid on your heart, however you are engaging the hurting and the broken in your world, in your sphere of influence, these three beliefs, I think, should really shape and steer what we do. Okay? I'm going to share them with you. We'll go quick. All right, the first one is this. Here's the first core belief. The first core belief is that every person has intrinsic value. Every person has intrinsic. Every man, woman, and child on this planet is valuable to God. In the book of Genesis, it says that we are image bearers of God, that he created us in his image. The Bible will go on to say that we were spoken forth from before the foundation of the world. Can I tell you what that means? We were spoken forth from before the foundation of the world. That means that the physical conception between your, you know, mom and your dad and the physical act that made you, that was secondary. What came first was that you were birthed in the heart of God. Isn't that so cool to think about? You were birthed in the heart of God before the foundation of the planet. The book of Isaiah will go on to say that we are precious to God. Every man, woman, and child is valuable to God in the Bay Area. I got to follow my notes. I'm sorry. I'm just totally off my notes here. Okay. Let me tell you about a story. Let me tell you a story about just how valuable we are. Sometimes we don't feel it, but just how valuable we are. I know of a foster dad who once told me, he said, yeah, I got a call for a placement once. And he said that he was on the phone with them, and they said, yeah, we got this child, needs a placement. He said, well, I've already got kids in my home, and so I don't know if I'm ready to take another one, but like, just tell me a bit about the kid. And they said, well, we don't know too much about him yet. He's brand new to the system. We do know that he's a biter. And my friend's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does he bite? And he said, I don't know if I want to take in a biter. And he said, as soon as that thought hit him, he said, all of his theology started flooding back into his mind. And then he realized, you know, I don't think the term biter is an adequate description of a human being. He said, the term biter is an incomplete description of a child. And this is why he said that. He said, because you are more than the worst thing that you've ever done. And you're more than the worst thing that's ever been done to you. Which, by the way, you might need to be here just to hear that one statement. Maybe that's just for you. You are more than the worst thing that you've done. You're valuable to God. You know, and he proved that, didn't he? How do you determine the value of something? You determine the value of something by what somebody's willing to pay for it. And what was God willing to pay for you? Everything. Absolutely everything. God proves his love for us in this, that while we were sinners, he died for us. And that brings you to our second core belief. Our second core belief is this. Second core belief is that their story is our story. Their story is our story. I would go so far as to say this. There may be no time in your life when you are more like God than in the moments when you open up your heart to someone who's in need, to someone who's in need of a family, to someone who's in need of love. You know why? Because that's exactly what God did for us. There was a time in my life when I was lost and I was beat up and I was broken and I was alone and I was hurting and I thought that because of the scars and the wounds from my past, like I had absolutely no hope for my future. But when I was at my lowest and my darkest place, my darkest moment, God made a way for me to be brought into his family. And if he did that for me, then surely I can do that for somebody else. Their story is my story. Ephesians 1:5 says this. It says, God decided in advance to adopt us into his own family by bringing us to himself through Jesus Christ. This is what he wanted to do, and it gave him great pleasure. Isn't that cool to think about that God adopting us and his family brought him pleasure? That he was stoked to do it? We don't think of it very often like that, do we? He was really excited to bring us into his family. And I could totally resonate with that. Again, as a foster dad, we get so much pleasure from bringing these little ones into our home. It's like so much joy. They bring fun and laughter and great memories. Take a look at this picture here real quick. Okay, so the two on the outside are two of my biological kiddos. That's Winnie and that's Gabe. They're in Eden Kids right now having fun. The one in the middle, I can't show you her face publicly like this. It's against the law for me to do that, but we're fostering her right now. You're going to have to trust me that she's super cute and super sweet. she's also an Eden kid, so you'll see us walking out with her. But honestly, I'd show you that picture not even to show you the little one in the middle, but to show you the smiles on my biological kids' faces. Our kids love, these little ones bring so much joy into our home. They love these little ones that come into our house. Absolute joy. But God bringing us into his family not only brought him joy and pleasure, it also brought sacrifice, didn't it? It comes with a cost. In the same way, when we show remarkable compassion, there will always, always, always be a cost involved. Regardless of the expression, there will always be a cost involved. I get asked all the time when people find out we're foster parents, they say, oh man, that's so cool, it's amazing, I can never do that. I can never, like, you invite kids into your home, and then like you pour your life into them, and you get attached to them, and then one day they just go back to their biological families and you never see them again. I could never do that. Like, doesn't that bother you? You know what goes through my mind every time I hear that? I think, of course it bothers me. Like, of course that hurts. Like, it rips your heart out every time. Do you think I'm some cold-hearted robot? Of course it hurts. I remember the first time the first little girl that we brought in, she was 4 months old when we got her. And we had her for just under a year. And during that year, we poured our life into this little girl. She took her first steps with us. She said her first words with us. She called my wife mommy. She called me dada. She was a part of our family. She was my little girl. She was a sister to my kids. But I remember throughout that year, not only were we pouring our heart into this little girl, we were also praying for her biological family, her parents. Her parents had made some mistakes. That's why their little girl was with us. But they're doing everything they possibly could, to every step that they needed to take to be able to get their little girl back. And at the end of about 1 year, the judge gave the green light, and he said, okay, it's time. And I remember it was yesterday, handing this little girl back into the arms of her father at my doorstep. My now 10-year-old son told me it was the first time he'd ever seen me cry. We wept that day. Of course it hurts. But you don't show compassion because it makes you feel good. Because compassion isn't about you. It's about them. I have a friend who says, you don't foster to get a child for your family. You foster to give your family to a child. There's a big difference, right? And again, regardless of the expression, this is true. You don't show compassion to get something for yourself. You show compassion to give yourself to something. And if you are willing to embrace both the pleasure and the heartbreak, both the joy and the sorrow, it's incredible to think of the impact that you can make. Just as an aside, this isn't always the case. But again, we talk about the impact that we can make. With this little girl that I'm talking about, she just turned 3. Her birthday was 2 weeks ago. It just turned 3 years old. Her parents just sent us a bunch of pictures. I haven't shared this with the church before, but when we built a relationship with this family, her family is our followers of Jesus now. And this father looked down at my son, my oldest son, who was crying as well, and he said, I give you my word, you'll always be in her life. And so we babysat this little girl over the last couple of years as well and stayed connected with her. And just it's so sweet to see the little girl that she's becoming and the way that her family has kind of transformed their life from what we can tell. It's amazing the impact that you can have if you're willing to embrace both the joy and the sorrow. And that brings me to my third and final core belief. And that's this, that our investment in the lives of vulnerable children will bring long-term impact. So again, this is pretty obvious, but children who grow up without a stable, healthy environment are far more susceptible to all kinds of issues as they get older. So for example, the FBI did a study back in 2013 that said that 60% of the kids that they had rescued from human trafficking, 60% came from foster care. 70% of the inmates in the California prison system today came from foster care. 80% on death row. Okay, so half of the kids that age out of foster care without getting placed into a loving, stable home by their mid-20s are going to end up unemployed, and they're going to end up, a third will end up living on the streets. I can just keep going with the stats. So here's what we realize. We realize we need incredible organizations like IJM and BAATC, and these groups are going to address issues like trafficking, like right when people are in the heart of it, right? And they're bringing awareness to this incredibly heartbreaking issue. We need great groups and organizations that are going to go down to St. James Park and to the Tenderloin in San Francisco and are going to address homelessness. Like, we need groups and organizations to address issues like right when people are in the thick of it. But what if, in addition to that, we also go upstream and we deal with it right at the source? Like, right before kids ever enter into these issues, we begin to care for them and provide places where they can have love and stability and a place to heal and have a different trajectory for their future. We begin to ask the question, what would the Bay Area look like 15 to 20 years from now if every single kid that entered into foster care today was immediately placed into a loving, stable home? How would that change the landscape of the Bay Area in the long run? We say it all the time, the best way to see a transformed Bay Area tomorrow is to care for a vulnerable child today. We really believe that. So we have this vision that one day the Bay Area Church is going to be known around the country as the place where abused and neglected children become beloved sons and daughters. And it's going to be through churches, great churches like Eden Church that say, how can we help? What do we do? I'm going to let you know of a couple ways that you can take steps to get involved. This is something that is stirring in your heart. But first, I want to show you just a quick story about my friend Josh. And I want you'll be able to see through his story how again, every single one of us can impact the life of a child.
Statistically, I'm supposed to be dead, in jail, or homeless. You see, as a foster kid, my odds were already pretty bleak. About 30% of foster kids end up homeless. Less than 3% will go on to earn a college degree. And only about half will be gainfully employed by the time they turn 24. Yet, here I am. Why? All because of Rodney. Let me tell you about Rodney. You see, I spent 3 years trying to get kicked out of Rodney's foster home. And I'll be honest, I did everything I could think of, and I am a fairly creative guy. My most notable stunt was I opened up a checking account, and then I proceeded to write $10,000 worth of bad checks. I actually got picked up by the police for that little brilliant stunt. What Rodney did was interesting. I remember after allowing me to spend the night in jail, he bailed me out the next morning, and I thought for sure that was going to be it, that this guy was going to give up on me. But Rodney sat me down and he said, Josh, you know, you can keep causing problems, but you've got to realize, son, we don't see you as a problem. We actually see you as an opportunity. You see, Rodney didn't see what was on the surface, right? This kid who was being a nuisance, this kid who was a troublemaker, or some might even say a lost cause. He saw what I could be. And that moment was my turning point. My turning point from being an inevitable statistic to who I am today, all because of one caring adult. You see, every kid is one caring adult away from being a success story. So let me be frank with you. You, watching this video right now, you could be the very reason one of these kids doesn't end up a statistic. Foster the Bay is focused on providing a loving home for every single kid in the foster care system. Now, they do this in two ways. Number one, by recruiting foster parents. Maybe that's something you're interested in. And they do this, secondly, by recruiting individuals to support these foster parents. Maybe that's something you're interested in. You see, these support teams, they come alongside the foster families as they care for these kids. Because of Rodney, my life was genuinely, drastically, forever changed. And with Foster the Bay's model, all of us can be a Rodney, either as a foster parent or as a member of that support team for the foster parents. Either way you look at it, you could be that Rodney. You could be that one caring adult in a kid's life that forever changes his life. To learn more, check out fosterthebay.org/get involved.
Now, I hope that you might be open to whether or not God might be leading you to take a step to get involved. And maybe for one of you, maybe two of you, that might actually be considering opening up your home to a child in foster care. For most of you, that's probably not what he's asking you to do. Okay, so you can breathe for a second. But maybe for one of you, maybe two of you, that is something he's calling you to pray about. If that's you, I want to encourage you to, again, we've got some next step cards out at the black, there's a black table out there right next to the guest center. Come and see me, and there's a next step card we can fill out to learn more information. For most of you, like I said, that's probably not what God's calling you to do. But, as Josh said, there is a way to actually support those who do take that step. We're a foster family with Foster the Bay, so we have a team of support friends that take this journey with us. And I can confidently say we probably wouldn't be fostering today if it weren't for our support friends because of some difficult times that we've gone through as foster parents. It's a long, hard road. It's a challenging road. But because we've done it within the context of community, and we've had people around us who have said, you know, we get this vision. We want to be a part of caring for these kids, being, you know, engaging the vulnerable. But we can't open up our home right now to a child in foster care. But, you know, we can support those who can. We'll bring meals. We'll offer rides. We'll babysit. My wife and I have been able to essentially, like, take some of this weight that was on our shoulders and be able to share it with others and be able to last longer. I can't tell you how meaningful support friends are to this process. And so if you're interested, you can go out and fill out a next step card as well. And what we'll do is if you fill out that next step card and you turn it in, like, here's going to be my guarantee to you, okay? Nobody's going to drop off a foster kid to your house this afternoon. All right, like, you have my word on that. All we're going to do is we're going to send you a link, okay? And we're going to send you a link to a meeting. We call it an interest meeting. It's just a informational, no-commitment meeting where you'll learn more about each of those roles and how you can take that step. Okay, we've got some meetings coming up over the next few weeks. But we'd love to be able to help you take that step. But the reality is, foster care is not for everybody. And so let me just close with this. Foster care is but one expression, simply one expression of remarkable compassion. I don't know what God's placed on your heart, what he's placed in your sphere of influence. It's but one expression of remarkable compassion. The question I just want to simply leave with you today is this, is regardless of the expression, are you living a life of remarkable compassion? I began our time by talking about that word, what that word compassion means. Let me just close by telling you what that word remarkable means. The word remarkable means you're able to remark on it. In other words, it's worth talking about. Are you living a life that's worth talking about? Because in Matthew 5, Jesus said, let your light shine before others that they might see your good deeds and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Are you living a life that's worth talking about? Because the fact is, God is calling us, in light of all that he's done for us, he's calling us into an adventurous, beautiful, pleasure-filled, sorrow-filled, dangerous life of remarkable compassion. And I hope that you'll say yes. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much for this amazing church. I thank you for Daniel and Kayla and their leadership here and the way, God, that they really want to make a significant impact into this community. Again, God, we do pray that this city would never be the same as a result of Eden Church being here. I pray, God, that you would stir in each one of our hearts, mine included, in new ways, God, that we can take steps to live lives of remarkable compassion to every person in our influence. God, I pray that you would help us to be bold and courageous, help us to trust you along the way. God, please speak to us and help us, again, to take steps, God, to honor you with every aspect of our life. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.